Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is September. March 12th.
God damn.
I'm trying to get to the good weather. March 12th. Am I right?
Yeah, but like September ain't even.
I don't know why the September thing even came.
It's actually the 13th, but
it's the 13th.
Yeah, who's counting?
It's the 13th. Are you sure? It's not the 13th.
It's the 12th, bro.
It is the 13th. Oh shit! I definitely thought it was the 12th.
Damn. Well, there's
we
that.
We both fucked up on this. Yeah.
September 12th or March 13th is one of the two. How's everybody doing today?
I'm good.
How'd y'all feel about the little snowstorm this morning?
Whatever that was. They really made it seem like we had some real shit coming.
Like a nor'easter and got to get
like
in the
what
house.
Y'all had last week.
Last week was nothing. But it was going by the next day, you know, because now it's so warm, it doesn't last. But yeah.
Well, I mean, also, let me remind you guys that you guys get hit very differently than
how
people
was it
that
for
are
you?
Out in the burbs. Like, it was snow. It wasn't as bad as before, but it was definitely like nigga, it's snowing outside. Like,
no, it was snowing, but the snow was rain by the time it hit the ground.
That's what I'm saying, but because you guys know where I live, it's a high elevation.
Oh yes, you catching that?
So yeah, I get snow, man. Like it was. I had to shovel.
Damn. How's your back doing? You all right?
I mean, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know. My man Carlos didn't come take care of me, so I gotta have a word with my man Carlos.
Carlos is tired, man. You've been shoveling all damn winter.
Look, you better get this money.
You know what I'm saying? before we start, man, I promised my man Ron Stewart. I've been promising for a smooth year that I would give him a shout out because he posts our show a lot. He's a big fan of the show.
Does.
So, peace to you, BR. Here's your shout out. You beat me in the damn head.
He's so rude. Thank you, Ron.
I watch Ron.
You just said he posts the show often, and you like, here you go. Here's your shout out. God damn it.
Look, damn it.
Stop bothering me. Thank you.
I watch Ron go from a young savage intern at Jive Records who was wilding. He was in the clubs every night chasing chicks. Now he walk around the office drinking green juice and, you know, drinking maca tea. And so, you know, he remembered the Soho House. And so I done seen him change from savagery to finery.
Refinement.
Yeah, refinement. And it kind of bothers me sometimes. I'm like, what happened to my young savage? You know, you ain't really.
I mean, we all got to grow up eventually.
I know. Except me. But, he ain't here for me no more, so.
Apparently.
You know what I'm saying? I'm still in it, Ron.
You still outside every, you know what? One day I'm just going to have to write like a short story on how you're outside every night.
I don't know. I'm not outside every night now. I pick my
You're
spots.
Outside a lot. You're outside a lot.
I enjoy it.
You're outside more than anybody I know who's been outside for the last like
that
20
is,
years straight.
The rest of us
are really tired. And you're outside.
That is true. That part is true because I don't never see nobody. No,
like there's nobody else who was outside hard in the mid 90s through the mid 2000s who's still outside except your ass.
Jeff been out in the streets since about 87.
85. You know what I'm saying?
But that even further proves my point. I know he's been outside since the 80s, but there's not even anybody who was outside in the 90s. Who's still
That's
outside,
exactly.
Except Jeff.
Look, man.
Just you.
You got to stay current on what's going on out here, man. It's a new world.
You got to be in the street, baby.
Yeah, I mean, you ain't got to go to anything, but shit, you know what I mean? Cut through something. I actually was thinking about that because I was, what was I doing? Oh, when I did the It's the Real podcast with them, I guess a year or so ago, whatever. And they were asking me about, you know, how I got started and everything. And then when I, after I thought about it, I was like, you know, I actually was a more of a, more, I was like a club, I was a club kid without realizing it. You know what I'm saying? I was like, oh yeah, I was a club kid. I didn't, looking back, I was like, oh, I was a club kid. I didn't even realize I was a club kid.
I think most, and we're all on a tangent, but I think most industry people who grew up in New York, who are your peers, you, Reggie, Miles, Matt, I think everybody was a club kid because that's what you did.
Like, yeah.
Y'all went to the rooftop, y'all went to the garage, that was Bentley. Such a part of New York life, Bentley's, Nails, even me, like technically I guess you could have called me a club kid my era because we were Cheetah, Justin, Show, Bungalow 8. I mean, like, it was, like, every, like, you were a club, everybody was a club kid, but that was just such a part of the culture. I mean,
yeah, Bungalow 8 was,
you know, Bungalow 8 was so lit. But, like, that's what you guys did. That's what you were doing in high school.
Yeah.
That's what you were doing when you came home from college. Like, y'all were all club kids.
I jumped out mad early. But irks is not the right term because it's not as that deep. But it's just kind of interesting now, like, you know, every now and again you get like a thing, like a piece of Chuck Bone, who's having his 50th birthday party tomorrow. I don't know if I'm actually going to make it or not, but, you know, it's like a black tie event and stuff. And that's nice. I mean, it's what he wants to do and everything. But it feels like the people that were going out in the 90s, the difference, I think, between me and them, again, we're way off on a tangent, between me and them is they're still trying to recreate that energy again. And I'm not.
Yeah, you've told us this before. You don't be trying to recreate it with the music, with the party vibe, with nothing. A lot of people want that though. Like, you want that old feel because it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Well,
it was a lot of fun.
You can kind of give that energy again, but you can't. It can't be the same. It still has to kind of. It's life still has to move forward in a way, but. You know, whatever. We're getting way off on a tangent. We'll get into that another time. I'll get some old club kids on the show, and then we'll do a club kid show.
Actually, I'm team restore the feeling all day, every day.
No, I'm down for the feeling being restored for sure. And there's some people out here trying to kind of do it, but you know, but I'm not trying to go dance to Biggie records for an hour. I'm good, man. I've done that already. But that's me. Peace to Biggie, by the way, who passed away last week, his anniversary. And peace to Craig Mack and his family who died. I don't know if it was suddenly, but our long illness.
Because, no, it wasn't suddenly.
Yeah, he was involved in a religious group that kind of kept him away from the public and from his family as well. So, but he passed away yesterday at the age of.
Well, the news came.
But the news was yesterday.
The news came in like the middle of the night, but I don't know. Do we know when he died? Do we actually know?
Not quite. That's what I'm saying. Not really. I'm assuming he died on the 12th, but I don't know, of a heart attack at 46 years old, which is really uncommon. And then, you know, he wasn't like not that it matters, but he wasn't like a big old, you know, obese guy where his heart, you know, he was, you know, still fairly, for physically looked to be decent shape. I don't know what happened, if he had heart problems over his life. I don't know, but you know, again, it's just sad that another, you know, hip hop person has passed away at such a young age.
And apparently it was, they're saying it was heart disease. I just read one article, I believe it was the Daily News. One of the guys who was his producer on the first album had gone and just spent some time with him prior to him dying, I guess. He, you know, this person was saying that he kind of knew he was going to die. He didn't have long, rather. So I don't know if this was something that was, I'm going to tread lightly on this. Apparently the church that he was attending is super religious, like one of those very extreme places.
Yeah, almost cultish.
Yes. And so, you know, I don't know if this is one of those, I'm just not going to go get the help because this is God's will type thing.
I'm going to pray over you and all that.
Yeah. So, he was, I don't think this was not, this didn't sound like it was unexpected.
Yeah. So, I mean, getting a peace to him and his family and to the Bad Boy family as well. Cause he was the first one.
He was the first one. And Craig's story is really, to me, one of the more, tragic isn't the right word, but like really kind of fucked up stories in hip hop because he was the first.
Mm-hmm.
And then before he could even get his album out, Biggie came along. And even the album promo, it was like him and Biggie. It was the Big Mac promo. Yeah.
Yep.
And Biggie blew him out the water. Like Puff focused all his attention on Biggie. Craig never didn't even put a second album out with Bad Boy.
Yeah, I know. Yep. And even Flavor in Your Ear
once the remix came out,
it took his song away from him. It became Biggie's song and LL's song and Buster's song.
It became everybody else's song.
But Buster wasn't on it. It was Biggie.
Yeah, Buster's on it.
Yeah, you're right. Rampage. Yeah. Rampage is right. Yeah, so it became
the fucking last Boy Scout. Where is Rampage?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Nigga had his rap name after a Damon Wayans movie. How the 90s. The last
Boy Scout. Yeah. So, I want to mention. First off, I want to start by mentioning. Wait, hold on. What about my mention? Shit. God damn it. What's the thing? This is a jump away. Oh, the Rachel Dolezal documentary.
Trailer. I really don't want to give. I didn't watch it.
Oh, you didn't watch the trailer?
I didn't watch it, and I haven't talked about it because I don't want to give her any energy. Because as long as we give her energy, motherfuckers will make documentaries about her.
Okay. Well, it's a very short clip. It's her and her son, who looks to be 15, maybe 16, 17 years old. And he's basically complaining, and being upset because of this documentary. And he's like, look, mom, like, you know, you're keeping this going. And in the process of keeping this going and filming all this, you're ruining my life and his brother who's not in this clip, our lives, because you just want to keep this thing going instead of just being our mother. It's kind of, you know, it's very kind of sad and poignant. But that's not what I wanted to focus on. It was interesting that you said it was mad backlash on Twitter and other places. And a lot of people wrote pieces about this documentary because nobody knew it was coming. Like this trailer just popped out of nowhere. I was like, what the hell is this? It's on Netflix. It's coming, I think at the end of April, I believe. But my thing is like, okay, well, all this bitching and hollering, everybody is going to watch this documentary.
I'm not watching that bullshit. I don't know, Jeff. I think had it come out at 2-3, how long ago was the Rachel shit? 4 years ago, even? Had it come out?
It's been a minute because Melissa Harris Perry was still on TV.
Right. So had it come out, and Melissa Harris Perry, that was like when she was just starting to really build for real, when Nerdland was building. Had it come out then, yes, I think people would have watched it because there was still a kind of curiosity about what the fuck is it about this woman, right? Now, I don't think people care that much to watch it. And I think a lot of people are kind of the same mind I am, which is she's trying to keep herself in the zeitgeist. And the only way she can do that is if we are giving it, not even white people, we, the black people have to be the ones that are giving it energy. And I think a lot of people are just over it. Like also what new is there that we possibly want to know about? Like get a job, Rachel. Stop trying to make your money off being fake black. Cause that's what she's doing. She's trying to make a living off of this shit. And it's like, get a job, bitch. Like just go get a job, work at the Walmart or whatever in an office somewhere and be a normal white woman. Just do that.
Be a normal white woman
who dates black men. Just do that shit.
I agree with the last part of your sentiment, but I disagree with the first part. I think people are going to watch this documentary to hate it. They're going to watch it and hate tweet it and hate talk about it. But they're gonna watch it to be like, I hate this bitch and look what she did to her kid. Like it's gonna be that. It's not gonna be a loving thing, but I think people, it's like a train wreck, a car wreck. People are gonna watch it because it's a car wreck and people are not gonna be able to turn away and they're gonna be able to take so many shots at her, cause she's an easy target, obviously. That's my theory. What you think, bro?
I mean, it was kind of heartbreaking actually, her son.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because you really just hear an exhausted and you know, a teenager that's sort of at his wit's end, right? Because he really doesn't have the ability to make any decisions, right? Like he has to basically eat every decision that his mother makes. And she is seemingly doing this without thinking about how this is affecting them. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, she's doing this because it changes her bottom line. I mean, I don't really know what to do. I don't really think about her. It's just kind of weird to watch. I mean, I'm good. I'm going to pass on it. I mean,
you ain't going to watch it either?
I mean, if I'm home and I ain't really doing shit and there really ain't nothing else on TV, you know, I think I'll fuck with it. You know what I'm saying?
So, I'm not watching it under any circumstances.
You boycotting it.
It's not even a boycott, because a boycott suggests I'm giving any thought to it. I'm just not.
It's not. You're just not.
I'm just not interested.
I'm interested in the business angle of this, though. I'm very interested in whether this was a documentary that was sold to Netflix, or if this is a documentary that was financed by Netflix.
Mm.
Because two different things to me. I mean, listen, if they finance this, it's good business. She moves the needle. She will be controversial in documentaries, fairly cheap to make.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is sold only because Netflix does a lot of trade in documentary shit that you would and like the most random, random document about anything. Yeah. So it wouldn't be uncommon for them to pick this up.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you know, they also finance some of those documentaries. So that's where I'm saying I'm very interested, because I don't really see a big splash coming from them. I think they sort of threw that spaghetti on the wall to see if it was going to stick. I think they'll probably, this was really more of a heat check. I think they're going to chill and they'll just put it out. And then kind of what happens, happens.
Bruh, still like, hey, who running this operation over here?
Because to me,
he's been wanting to open Netflix books like, for so long.
That niggas need to see their books back. He's like, I don't understand some
forensic accounting. And we're like,
how y'all make money over here now?
I've been telling y'all. I was reading a report in Barron one day, and it was just going through all of their debt, and I was just blown away. I was literally blown away by the amount of debt that they had accumulated, with the fact that they have over 100 million subscribers that are paying monthly fees.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even, I mean, I guess you can still accumulate debt, but it was just,
I mean, we're still, we're also trying to figure it out, because at this point in the game, I don't know how much more scalable Netflix's business is.
I don't know. But I feel like they got some other tricks up their sleeve that they're gonna roll out.
And really quick, like before we change the topic, speaking of Netflix, if you guys are interested in business and sort of the strategies of businesses that go at each other, the competitors, there's a great podcast called Business Wars that I've been listening to, and they started with Netflix versus Blockbuster. And then it was like Netflix versus Blockbuster versus HBO, and they did like a 7-part series, and now they're doing Nike versus Adidas. So it's really, really interesting, man, and they really sort of take, you know, the quotes from the sources, they talk about the strategies, they talk about things that weren't necessarily public knowledge. You kind of had to be in the know a little bit to get that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. If you guys are interested in business stuff like that, I'd say take a listen.
Yeah, I'd like to be interested to hear the Netflix versus Blockbuster thing, because
it's amazing.
Because we've mentioned it before, I believe, on the show, but for those who don't know, I think most people listen probably do, but I mean, at one time, man, Blockbuster was like, dude, that, like, on a Friday night,
it was the club.
It was literally the place. Yeah, it was the place to be.
Yeah.
You run into everybody getting their shit together.
Everybody. And, you know, the late fees and all the bullshit. And I remember that little slot to slide the videos. It was like, they had
the
it
not,
on.
The not rewinding, all that.
Yeah, bullshit. They had it on Smash. So, it was interesting to see this, how Netflix avoids some of those pitfalls. Obviously, first thing is they don't have brick and mortar stores, but still. Did any of y'all see, we got to just discuss real quick the Set It Off play clips.
I only saw the one you sent, which is really tragic.
I think those are the only ones that I saw around. But
Well, first of all, did we talk about? Did y'all talk about Set It Off on the show?
I don't think so. No.
We talked about it in group text. We haven't talked about Set It Off, the stage musical. Or is it a musical, the stage play, whatever the fuck.
Javarius Jenkins, isn't it?
The various Jamal Watkins.
I think it's Javarius.
You know, Connie Boy.
Yeah.
You know, he put the play together.
He went to school for it. You know, he went to Morehouse.
He wrote a couple plays, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He used to do the youth pageant.
Down the Greater Mount Calvary.
He
wrote one play that was real nice. He was the praise dancers.
It was on Black History Month. I remember that. It was real nice.
Yeah.
Jacarius
Johnson. Hold on. Look, just to set the tone, Jacarius is spelled J-E apostrophe. C-A-R-Y-O-U-S. I don't know how you make that name up.
I promise that's not how Jacarius actually spells his name. I promise that he threw that apostrophe in there and changed it to make it look fancier in his credits.
It looks more French this way. It's more
giant. Yeah. It looks artsy.
So this play is a short run. They're only doing a few cities. They're doing D.C., Houston, Chicago, St. Louis for one night, Detroit, and they ended up in L.A. So they ain't doing Atlanta. They ain't doing New York. They ain't doing Charlotte. They ain't doing a whole Dallas. They ain't doing a whole.
It's not even a real Chitlin' Circuit, right?
It ain't even a real Chitlin' Circuit. They need to be up in Birmingham and Jackson, Mississippi, or Little Rock. But this play is starring the Brat, Demetria McKinney. Who is it? Is it Kyla Pratt, I believe, one of the gals? And who's
you
the
that one?
Yeah, Kyla Pratt plays the Kyla Pratt.
He said the Brat already.
Yeah, Brat.
The Brat is Cleo, obviously.
LaToya Luckett.
LaToya plays, I think. What's the call them?
Vivica's character?
Jada.
Oh, Jada's character.
Demetria plays the Jada, the Vivica character, because she's in one of the clips. And then Kyla played the slow one.
Well, you start calling that. But obviously the Brat plays Cleo, which is really outstanding casting, even if the play itself is trash.
Because I really want to see this play.
Who else?
I want to see this.
I might travel down to DC
to see this damn.
Y'all, this play look like it costs $150 to stay. Y'all remember when Candy and them was fighting over their play? It ain't even that. It ain't even a mother's love. It ain't even that.
I'm curious as to how he acquired the rights to do this. Like I would have thought that would have been. That would cost a nice piece of change. You know what I'm saying? But listen, God bless him. You know,
he's going a really, really limited run because he didn't get the rights.
Well, no.
Or maybe the rights cost so much that he ended up having to do a limited run because he didn't have enough money to do in other cities.
Nah, I think once you kind of get the rights, you get the rights for a certain amount of time. I don't think it would be for a few months. I think also this is a play, and I think one of the things we have to remember is that with a play, you have a set, right? So in order for you to really sort of make money with these sorts of plays, that's why they're doing 2 and 3 nights. In most places, because of trucking costs,
true.
Right, when you have to break that stuff down, you have to like sets.
It makes
not,
sense to just keep it in place.
Keep it up, exactly, because it's really cumbersome. Even on a small scale, it's pretty cumbersome.
Yeah.
I mean the set didn't look good at all. Like it wasn't like
that bitch was Amazon boxes.
Yeah, like it looked like if you had a really good high school art department, like they could have done that. Like a quality high school art department, they could have definitely done that stage, you know. But
they went to Michael's to put that set together.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And you know they got Mr. Earl took it up with the carpet pan.
Earl back there. Earl ain't even got a power drill. Earl back there. Where my Phillips head?
Hand me that flathead screwdriver.
Just give me that butter knife.
And some electric tape. And some twine.
And some twine, exactly.
and some duct tape, some masking tape.
Give me your shoelace, boy.
Yeah. Oh my God! This play looked terrible. The clips are on Facebook. The audience by the end.
The clip of Cleo getting shot, my nigga. That's all.
The audience is laughing. The audience is laughing, talking back to them, hooting, hollering, and that's exactly why I want to go. Because the level of niggardry in this audience and play is at an all time high, and I feel like I need to be in them and sit in it and just soak it all up.
Yeah.
So God bless them, man. Good luck. Maybe they'll get to New York one day, down to the Beacon.
It'll be at the Beacon.
I don't even know.
Or it'll be at the Alhambra Ballroom.
Oh, shit.
This is going to be at the Willie Tyler and Lester Community Center.
They're going to be able to wrench punch.
They're going to have an NA meeting in the back of that shit.
They're going to be in a church fellowship hall.
At work.
And a little bit of as much chicken as Miss Doris can make.
And they go out of after school kids. The kids could come in for free since they're gonna be here already.
Exactly. Y'all sit down here in the front. Y'all sit down here in the front. Y'all be quiet.
Don't put it on the Boys and Girls High School. That's what it is.
Oh shit, so peace to them, man. We gotta mention Joel Santana, who was on the run from the police the federal police for having a gun in his bag at Newark Airport.
He has
since turned himself in and is facing up to 10 years in jail. I don't know if he's going to get that. I don't know if he's going to get any jail time, but that's what he's facing right now. He ran for what, about 2 days he was missing?
About 36 hours.
36 hours.
Okay, but here's my question, because I'm not even going to pretend I researched this. I just know he got caught with a gun and ran. Is he facing time because of possession of the gun, because he's an ex-convict? Is he facing time because he ran from the police? Is he facing time because he tried to sneak the gun on a plane? Or like which one of the, or is it all three?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. I would bet all of the above. A prosecutor is definitely, I mean, listen, do I think, You know, this is a slippery slope for me, obviously, but I'll discuss it. But listen, clearly he wasn't looking to go take the gun on a plane to hijack a plane, right?
Right.
We know that, right?
Yeah.
This sounds to me like the joint was in his bag and he forgot.
He forgot.
Because it was a little Derringer. It was very small.
Probably, it's something you wouldn't have saw, right? Like if you got a bag full of stuff, you probably didn't even realize it was in there. Probably forgot it was in there. Got to the airport, and yeah, dude, like it's very clear. You know, the thing about TSA, man, like when shit ain't going right, it's real clear that shit ain't really going right.
Right.
So I think he probably just took off. Like, I mean, it's kind of weird that a cab would just sort of take a dude fleeing the airport and just take off with him.
It just rode out with him? Like, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what is it? The cab driver don't know what's going on back there. And they don't really have a confirmation until they literally go into that bag and, you know, grab the weapon. I mean, so this isn't a movie, right? Like, it's not what you see in a movie.
Also, like what I think a lot of people don't understand is a guy like Juelz or any other kind of artist, singer, whatever, like when they travel kind of a lot on the weekends with the little shows or club appearances or whatever. So they kind of have a bag that they probably always keep kind of packed and ready.
Yeah.
So it's easy for him to kind of have forgotten it because now he unpacked and then put the gun in the bag. He probably just grabbed the bag that was kind of already packed, maybe threw a pair of clean underwear in there and kept it pushing because he probably was going maybe somewhere for a night or two at the most anyway. So it's probably like a little bag. Let me just grab this and go. So I could see how he could forget it. That being said, you know, the cops are still going to give him
It's a federal offense. You at the airport, bro. You can't. Yeah. And I mean, definitely running makes them kind of probably going to be a little harsher on you. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just cop, basically, dude, they just used a bunch of federal resources.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To come and find you. So, I mean, I wish him well. I hope this sort of works out. I hope he doesn't get 10 years, obviously. I don't, you know, again, he wasn't looking to go and hijack the plane.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see.
He might have to.
He might have to spend a few nights somewhere.
That's what I'm saying. You have to sit down for a minute. So
yeah. He definitely has to spend some nights.
Yeah. Did y'all see Fix My Life?
I saw them both. You know, Sean didn't watch that shit.
Sean, you don't watch. You don't watch her album?
No, Sean didn't watch because of the subject matter.
I thought you might watch the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was the second one. I just never even because that was.
She doesn't. They usually don't do a back to back.
No, I don't know why they did it.
Yeah. So the first one was about Memphis Mickey Wright. You know, full disclosure, I worked with at Jive for probably about 5 years. I guess it was. Mm-hmm. Maybe more.
Well, we all know.
Yeah, exactly. And Memphis' father was murdered by a Klansman. Memphis.
Murdered, dismembered, and set on fucking fire.
Yeah,
that's insane.
It was crazy. And it's like a real quick story. Well, on the show, they talked about how he never really dealt with it, and he never grieved over it. He just kind of kept pushing, and that caused a lot of dysfunction to happen. His mom and his sister, none of them dealt with it. Yeah, the mother was, the mother's stance was, I was trying to protect my kids and not make them have to deal with it anymore because it was already such a painful thing. Right. And my honest point to her was, by protecting them, you never let them grieve. She wasn't screaming on her or nothing. She was just like, yo, but by protecting them, you never let them grieve, and now they have these issues. But to Memphis, I remember, like, he never said anything about it at the job, even when we would kind of have, like, you know, quiet, you know, times amongst ourselves, just kind of kicking it. And so one day, me and another guy I worked with at the job was in my office. It was late. It was like, still not late. It was like 7:30 or so. And we was in my office talking and had the television on. And it was, I think the show Current Affair was on at that time. And we're watching the TV and the thing comes on the screen because that's when they had the trial.
Right.
And it was like, Mickey Wright Sr., and they tell about the thing. And me and my guy are like, wait, what?
Right.
Mickey Wright Sr.? And he was in Memphis, and we saw Memphis' brothers and stuff. And I was like, we had no idea. Like, Memphis never mentioned that. We didn't bring it up to him either. But
right.
I'm just saying, all that to say, he definitely went out of his way to not ever say anything about the situation.
Well, what's crazy is that based on the timeline, it literally would have been like the year before he came to New York and started working at Arista.
Yeah, well, it was very soon after. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So imagine being young, being immediately like you're dealing, this great tragedy happens in your life, and then immediately like you're thrust into this craziness of the entertainment industry, because that time span in between him starting at Arista and him signing T-Pain and going to RCA and getting his own label deal, like all of that shit happened really quickly.
It was like a couple years period.
Yeah, so I think that, and he was young. He was very, very young. So I think that was a perfect storm. I'm not giving Memphis any passes for his behavior as a grown-ass man, but I just think it was a perfect, you know, people come into this game and get caught up, and that was a perfect storm.
He got caught up.
To get caught up, like, for real, for real. Like, you go through a massive tragedy, you lose the adult male father figure, you leave home, you come to New York, you immediately get swept up with these names and these people, you get a lot of money, a lot of power, very quickly, and nobody to guide you through it. Perfect formula for getting caught up.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so. I used to have the biggest crush on Memphis, though. God damn.
Really?
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, but he was whatever. But I did have a cook because he was, I mean, y'all are two men. I know you don't pay attention, but Memphis is very fine.
Okay.
Good looking boy. Anyway. Yeah.
Anyway.
So that was very Auntie Naima right there. That's a good looking boy.
Good looking boy.
Good looking boy.
Was a good stop.
And, I mean, my crush didn't start until he was at RCA with a label deal, but because, you know, he looked like a little kid when he was at Arista, but once he got cleaned up, you know, had a little change.
Yeah.
Had some waves, had some 360s going on.
Definitely did. He used to wear that durag every damn day. And then the second episode, which is, I think, a two or three parter, was about, there's seven brothers in total, five on the show who were, both were born to drug addicted parents, in foster homes, and like all the trauma that they went through. And it's just a lot going on, man. Like, just kind of too much. We could damn near do a whole show about that show. And that's when
it was so And there's a part two.
Yeah.
So much. And the father act like he don't know nothing about nothing.
Yeah, he's like, I ain't know none of this.
I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, I know he has some mental issues. She's like, the fuck you think they're from? I don't know. That. Like, literally, just acting completely oblivious.
Because the oldest son is mentally challenged because he was born drug addicted.
Yeah, he was born
with cocaine and heroin in his system. Yeah, so and one brother got killed. Another was in the pen for life. The two youngest ones are both gay. There's one brother who's like one of the most angry.
One of them was assaulted.
Yeah, in foster care. Probably both of them, honestly. You know, the other one just hasn't said it yet. One guy's one of the angriest dudes I've ever seen in my life. Like, this dude's just like ready to flip or to die. It's just a lot going on. So, Fix My Life's been really good so far this season, man. We got a lot more to go. So, peace to Ayanna. Did y'all watch that Married to the Medicine reunion?
Yeah, I watched that.
What'd you think, bro?
No, I need to. I kind of fell off on the last half of the season. I'm not sure why, but I need to watch the reunion.
You don't miss some good television. Mm-hmm. What you think, bro? What you think about it?
I think kind of the same. It just echoed the same things all season. You know, Heavenly's just an awful person, man.
Oh, like, man, she's a really.
And, you know, for a minute, I kind of was like, you know, is she doing this for television?
Nope.
And then I was like, nah, like, she's really a terrible person.
Yeah, she really
like,
is.
I would never be in her company. Like, I would never want to be around her.
She constantly just hits so far below the belt. Like, the shit she be saying is like, yo, like, really be? Like,
and you know what? And it really comes off as... Like, it really comes off as an insecure kid. It comes off as a person. Yes. It comes off as a person who was constantly teased in their youth and, you know, made it and has this sort of, and I'm using air quotes, has this great life, right? And she, and so now she's on the attack at every fucking moment. She's on the attack. And it really is about keeping that heat off of her ass. This isn't about anything other than that.
Yeah, this episode was, she was bad, man. Like, the shit she was saying was just like, yo, B, you like, come on, man. Like, what's going on here? What'd you think about Simone and old Cecil?
Look, man, I think their marriage was on the rocks way before this show. I think that this show has given folks, given them a sense of self. Like, I think sometimes in marriages, you tend to lose yourself, right? You're one. You become one. It's like where, you know, you don't see one without the other. Or the moment you show up somewhere, the person, everyone asks, where's the other person, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what the show has done is that it's given them, you know, a sense of who they are, right? Like, they can operate on their own. And I think that Simone has some shit with her that I think isn't kind of brought out. I think Sisu is angled as sort of the bad guy and sort of terrible husband. Listen, Cecil has his own shit too. Like, he doesn't really communicate well. But again, I think that that's because this marriage was on the skids, man. Listen, they're
put up a good front for a lot of this.
Well, I think that they tried. I don't think that it was a front as much as I think that after 21 years, you have two kids. You know, I think those kids got to a point where it was like, we definitely can't divorce right now.
Mm.
You know, like, you know, they would have been, if they had tried to do this 5 years ago, you know, you're dealing with a young kid.
Yeah, nine and 11 or 12
or something like that. So I think now there's a sense of freedom. They got the, you know, one is out the door. They got another one getting ready to go out the door. And, you know, again, man, they can move around. Well, I think Simone can move around, and it's like, I don't really want to do this shit no more.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do it. And I'm not.
But she seems very cavalier. She, like, the girl with cavalier is my turn. But she definitely seems done. Like, it's over and I ain't going back.
Because I think that she feels like this shit has been hovering and existing for a very long time. And I think that, yeah, I think Cecil's a part of that, right? Like, listen, man, somebody goes and gets another fucking house, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know how terrible of a nigga you gotta be?
Yeah.
For your wife to say, not, yo, we should just get separate rooms, or I'll sleep downstairs so I don't wake everybody up, or I'll, you know, like, nigga, a whole nother house?
Yeah, on the other, like, side of town.
Far away.
Like, far away.
Like, it ain't like y'all say, yo, we gonna buy the house next door and make a compound.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanna be 45 minutes away from
you. Yeah. Like, I don't want none of y'all around.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Also, you think it might be somebody sniffing around?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, Dr. Simone is an attractive woman. She still, you know, she still could pull it together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listen, man, you know, old Herman, and, you know, old Herman and them boys will come around and try to buy her a little kibasiye or something down to the bar. And, you know, listen, you got your in-hand makeup all the time now. Your practice is probably flourishing right now.
Yeah.
And you are able to move in a way that just... You don't really want to be lugging this ball. You don't want to be tied down. Like, not that. Listen, I'm kind of joking in a way, but I think that for someone like her, like, I think this gives her a little bit of freedom now, because now I feel like she's able to go out and date and she's able to call the shots. You know, she's not a young woman who doesn't have the means. She has the means. She can go where she wants to go. She can do what she wants to do. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it gives her a different level of experience right now. And I think she's probably interested in that. And I'm not saying that in a bad way.
Yeah, it just is.
Yeah.
Other thing that slipped out before we move on is that it came out in the clips for this week that Cecil got a gal. And I knew he got a golf buddy that apparently, like, he spends a lot of time with and talks to all the time and, you know, and is adamant of not cutting back no time. He's like, that's my friend, I love her, and I'm gonna keep talking to her. So it's like, okay,
well, listen,
you know, it's Atlanta.
It ain't just Atlanta. Like, you in a whole nother house. You in a whole nother house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't, why are we tap dancing on this shit here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's okay. So what, you going to tell him that he got to leave his little lady friend alone while you got your gentleman suitors?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Keeping time with you.
Cross town.
And cross town. And that, listen, just y'all doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Y'all going to split, make it amicable. There's no need to, you know, bash each other. You guys had 21 years together. That's a hell of a run. You know what I'm saying? And it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. It is what it is, yeah. So peace to them. We'll follow up next week with part two, which looks like it's going to be super crazy. I say let's get on into this Bruno. No, not Bruno yet. Let's get on into this OJ interview. Did you see that, Nye?
Nah.
Sorry, I was on mute. No, because
you see the Bruno interview. I mean, OJ?
The OJ. No, because it's from before he went to jail. It's from when he was promoting If I Did It, and I just am not that interested.
You should watch it.
I don't really think I need to watch it. I mean, I know the whole premise of the book. I mean, I knew that, so it's
no, but the nigga ain't even, the nigga is basically saying he did it. He ain't even saying, like, oh, what could have happened. He's saying he did the shit. Like, she's asking him pointed questions. At first, he keeps trying to say hypothetically. Then after a while, he stops saying that. And she's asking, like, pointed questions. Like, so what did you do when you got there? And he's like, well, what I did. And he's literally lays out what happened. Like, the nigga absolutely killed them folks. No question. Like, it's, and he's like kind of laughing, kind of joking about the shit.
I think that it was also a very different time for him.
Yeah, it was 2006.
And I think that, and so what happened is that OJ is pretty much riding off the high of being found not guilty, right? He's able to sort of you know, still earn a living a little bit here. And, you know, I think he's, I just think he's a narcissistic asshole. Like, I just think that's just a part of what he is. And I don't, and to me, this was Fox really, you know, they had this one in the vault. This interview is 20 years old, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 15 years old or whatever. Like, it's just, come on, man.
Not 15, it's 12, because it was 2006.
Oh, okay. 12 years old.
Yeah, 12 years old. But still, like, I didn't understand what made them put this out specifically now.
Yeah, like, they didn't even put it out as soon as he came home. It's like, you ain't have shit else to do? I think the timing is weird.
It's free money.
OJ being back in the zeitgeist was annoying to me, period. I think I said that. Like, I get it. I mean, the People versus OJ was great. The documentary on OJ, the five-piece, what was it?
The People versus OJ Simpson.
No, that was the TV show. What was the documentary? American Crime?
The making of what Ezra Edelman did.
Mm-hmm. That was excellent. But I didn't need his probation hearing live streamed, and I didn't need 2 days of fucking media counting down to said probation hearing being live streamed. I was happy to see that nobody tried to sit down with him once he got out, because I was waiting for that shit.
I mean, who knows if it happened, right? Like, who knows what people have done and they're holding it in and just, you know, waiting for a money grab, like what they did with this. Like, they didn't air this because it was in poor taste when they did it. You know what I'm saying? It didn't just, they did this. It was in poor taste, and that's why it wasn't aired. And now all of a sudden they feel like it's about airing it. Now, listen, we understand that Fox knows that the racial component here is also at play.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a money grab. It's a money grab. It's free money. Whatever they made from the advertising is literally free money. Somebody just pressed play.
Yeah, it's already sitting there in the can.
It's already sitting there.
Yeah, it was just bizarre to watch the dude literally just break down how he killed them, you know. Like, step by step, like, it was like, oh, that's why he did it. It's wild, man. We haven't really talked much politics in the past couple of months, but your man has been just wilding on such another level lately. I feel like we got to say something about this nigga Trump.
Well, let's start with Rex Tillerson. So, a former Russian spy was poisoned in the UK.
Yes.
The UK was immediate to say Russia did this.
Mm-hmm.
Our side, the White House and Sarah, said that they condemned it, but they would not say the Russians did it.
Mm-hmm.
Rex Tillerson, our Secretary of State, was like, the Russians absolutely did it. And then 24 hours later, his ass was fired.
Was fired.
Via text by our president.
Yeah.
I am baffled as to how anybody can still not believe that Russia has Trump in their pocket. It's fucking blatant. It's so blatant. Like, it's
yeah,
so
they're not even, they're not, they, and it came out, I mean,
it's
so
not
much,
even smooth.
It came out, I guess, a week. No, I think it was last week. Yeah, it was last week. It came out last week that initially Trump wanted to make Mitt Romney the Secretary of State. And it was all but done. And the Russians called him and was like, nah, B, because Romney don't fuck with the Russians. He's always said, you know, they're horrible people and we need to, like, you know, watch them and keep our guards up against them. Mm-hmm. The Russians called him and was like, nah, B, you can't have him. And that's why at the last minute, he switched to Tillerson because Tillerson has so many Russian ties interest with Russia. Exactly.
Yeah, Tillerson has Russian interests. I mean, listen, Tillerson did not want this job. His wife convinced him it would be a good idea. He's been miserable, clearly, the whole time he's been in this job. But mm-hmm. I'm sure he's mad as hell that this fucking idiot bested him and fired him while simultaneously being relieved that he's out of there. You know what I wonder, though? When you work at the White House, I mean, obviously you serve at the pleasure of the president, but are there contracts in place? Like, do you have to get paid a severance? Because this revolving ass door has to be expensive.
You know what? That's a good question. I don't know. Only one I remember them talk about money with was, of course, the black one, Omarosa.
Omarosa, because she was
said that she was going to get paid to the end of the year. That's what
I'm wondering. Because think about, I don't know if you guys watch Rachel Maddow, but Rachel has what
I watch Rachel.
Big board.
Yo, it's like 45 people
Yo,
on the board.
Yo, that shit looks like a PowerPoint presentation in like 8 points. It's like when you're trying to do a term paper and squeeze everything on one. Yeah. There's so
you can't
many
even
people.
Fit everybody on there.
It's insane the number of people that have left this administration, and we're not even a full year and a half in. No, we are. No, we're not. We're not a full year and a half in. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I mean, he's done so much. Now, I don't know if y'all saw today. Apparently, he spoke at the Air Force, and he was like, you know, doing the Trump bullshit, you know, going off the cuff. You guys did a great job, blah blah blah. And he said, you know what? We're gonna start a space force.
This
we're
going to
be
here.
Fighting war in space. He literally said that today.
You just be, like, this is what they just, he just always wants to stand at the podium and talk. That's all this say, people wants to do.
Yo, we literally have like a 9-year-old.
Is Barron is making policy, dude.
Yeah, and like he's doing and saying anything he want, and motherfuckers just like, oh, he said
whatever.
He wants a space force. They let him do the fucking parade now on Veterans Day. $50 million to have some people marched out in D.C. just because
he wants to feel like a dictator.
And because when he was in France, they did the parade while he was there.
For Bastille
Day. He sat there with Coon and he was like, I like this. This is good. I'm going to do this in the States. And that's literally where it came from. It
right.
means
but
nothing.
But the irony is the parade that he saw was for Bastille Day, and he doesn't of even course. Understand the significance of Bastille Day.
Of
but
not.
Still, because he's a fucking idiot. But also the point of like him being back on his little speaking tour. As much as Trump hates this job, because be clear, I'm 100% sure he hates this job because it's nothing like what he thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to just be able to get out there and fucking talk.
And
about
say
what the fuck ever. Which is why he's going to run for re-election for sure. Because he loves that part of it. And he bringing Oprah in the shit. Oprah ain't even studying Trump. Talking about, I know Oprah's weaknesses.
He's still talking about Hillary Clinton.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. He switched to Oprah because he always has to have a foil.
Yeah.
Trump likes to be in a fight. And he has to have somebody to point to and bully and talk shit to. Which is why he keeps invoking Hillary, because he has no one else to talk about, which is why he keeps Obama and Hillary's name in his mouth. So now Oprah is another fucking, an actual billionaire. And he sees room for another target and another like competition. But Oprah is in her house in Santa Barbara.
Like, what are you?
With the dogs.
Yeah.
And this nigga talking about Oprah. She ain't studying you. She watching Wrinkle in Time. Like,
exactly.
Getting
ready for Queen Sugar next season. Like, so what are you talking about, B? Like, we can sit here all day and just talk about all this fucking idiotic, heinous shit this nigga does and says. But it just blows my mind how these Republicans are just constantly kowtowing to, like, literally any idiotic shit. He got the porn star shit. It's like, yo, man, like, you know, just anything he does, you know, I don't understand why they just kowtow. Is it purely just because he's a white man? Is that what it is?
I mean, I don't even think it's that. I think once, because the tax reform code hasn't been signed into law yet, right?
No.
Once, that's what they're waiting on. That's what all of this is about. They want that tax reform. I think that once the tax reform becomes law, you'll see some attitudes change. Yeah.
You got the tariff shit. Like, that's about to be crazy.
Like let's think about
it's about to be $19 for a can of Coke.
Yo, it's crazy. But let's also think about how crazy it is that at this point in the game, the shit with the call girl doesn't even seem that crazy. Like, it's not even, it's like whatever.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
whatever.
So,
but this is how banana republics start.
So, absolutely.
Niggas better start buying absolutely. Up canned goods. I'm about to go stock up.
Yeah, because
water.
Word. It just shit. sit in the house with a gun pointed at the door.
Basically.
Bro, you got something to say about Trump?
Nah, man, I ain't got nothing to say about them, man. Fuck all them. Fuck their mamas. Fuck them all. Everybody.
And their mamas.
Seriously. Yeah.
that was bruh's political views.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm waiting for this investigation to wrap up, and I hope these motherfuckers are strung up at high noon in Times Square.
Yeah, that would be nice. Let's get on into this Bruno Mars thing. So a few days ago,
we've talked about it briefly on here before too. Yeah, we talked about it before, but
But it popped back up again, like, 3-4 days ago. I forget the girl's name now. Cincy something. She was on. There's a show called The Grapevine. No, that's not The Grapevine.
Yeah, it's called The Grapevine.
Yeah, where there's I forget the girl who hosts it, and they have a room, and it's a lot of people in that room. Usually like 15 and sometimes even 20 people, all seem to be 30 and under.
Yeah, it's a show directly for a millennial point of view. So yeah,
exactly, and they'll bring up a topic. You know, it's almost like if you was having a house party, a gathering, more than a party. And it's like, you know, you're playing cards and all of a sudden somebody bring up Beyonce, Jay-Z cheating on Beyonce, and it turns into a whole discussion. That's what the show basically is. The world throw a topic out there and they'll kind of go around the room and discuss it, and people obviously have different types of points of views. So this week was the topic of, is Bruno Mars culturally appropriating black culture? And this one girl jumped on there and had made all these comments about Bruno and Michael Jackson and Prince, and how Michael Jackson wasn't accepted until his skin lightened. And that's when the white people really started liking him. And, you know, Bruno's just a culture vulture and he can't really sing. He's just karaoke. And, you know, how can we accept him in black music and not our own? It was just a whole thing. But it jumped on Twitter and it turned into like a massive thing that lasted for a couple days. And I know, Nye, you had some points about it because you were speaking about some stuff in your music sermon post as well.
Yeah, I mean, so I did a while ago a music sermon post on Blue Eyed Soul, quote unquote Blue Eyed Soul. And I dropped it again on Saturday in light of the Bruno conversation, because my issue with the Bruno conversation, my issue with millennials often, young millennials, I want to specify that, is that these motherfuckers act like everything they talk about is the first instance of it happening anytime, anywhere, ever. And they're the first people to actually ever pick it up and examine it and have a point of view about it. They act like anybody older than them, us Gen Xers, boomers, whatever, have just been walking around here ignoring everything. Yeah. Like, I think this...
And they're schooling us to everything.
Yeah, I think the girl even said something like that non-black people are now starting to become comfortable making black music or something like that. Here's the thing about appropriation.
It was retarded.
The appropriation of black music has been a conversation since the advent of commercial music and radio. Since you started selling music, we've been talking about white people stealing black music. Mm-hmm. It is a real thing. It happens. But every non-black person who makes soulful or quote unquote black music is appropriating. And that's why I dropped the Blue Eyed Soul thread again, because I'm like, if you walking around calling Tina Marie your auntie, but you got issue with Bruno, we need to talk. Now, it's one thing to say that Bruno's music maybe is shallow or doesn't evoke enough emotion for you, or it's not, you know, it doesn't feel genuine enough for you. But you can say that about black artists who make black music.
Absolutely.
That's a completely different thing than appropriating. Like, Vanilla Ice was appropriating black culture. We could even argue about Justin and appropriating black culture. You know, it's a gang of rappers out here appropriating black culture. Bruno ain't it. Bruno honors the roots. He respects it. He gives credit. You know, that appropriation means you take it and you act like you just found this shit laying in the street. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Kardashians appropriate black culture because they act like they the first motherfuckers to do this shit. Bruno says specifically, this is the music I love. This is where it comes from. This is my source. This is all that. It is not appropriation means that you actually understand the culture and the nuance around what you're using out of that culture. And Bruno's that. The other thing is that Bruno ain't white. Like, goddamn.
Yeah. You know,
his name is Peter fucking Hernandez. He is Filipino and Puerto Rican. And the fact that, so I asked the question, why y'all mad at Bruno, but ain't nobody got no issues with Khaled or French. And I know French has had some moments, but none of it, like Bruno is pitchforks and fucking torches for Bruno, right?
What do people say?
So first of all, because neither Khaled nor French are Black or Puerto Rican or Latino, like
any of that. They're right. Middle Eastern.
They're Arab. Like, yeah. Arab, so a lot of people were coming back to me and saying, well, French is Black. He's literally from Africa. Motherfuckers. Y'all some stupid motherfuckers. Africa is a continent. I can say I'm North American.
It's the biggest continent in the world.
I can say I'm North American. That ain't got shit to do with my race.
At all.
Like, it's not even American. I'm North American. That ain't got shit to do with my race. The nigga is from Morocco. He's Arab. His father is Arab. Somebody was like, his father's from the Bronx. No, he's not. His father's Arab. His mother's Arab. He's
came
Arab.
Here when he was a kid. He came here from Morocco.
His father went right back to Casablanca when Bruno was a teenager. I mean, when French was a teenager. And when French is asked, French actually designates himself. He'll say, my son is Black. My ex-wife is Black. My mother is African. I'm African. And the reason he says African, it means he'll say they're Black, but he's African, is because he knows African is going to translate to Black for some people, right?
Yeah.
But the number of people in my mentions who argued that French was okay because he was Black, that's a problem. And the fact is, and with Khaled, they were like, well, Khaled worked in Black radio. He's worked with Black artists. He's done. He's
Bruno's
done.
Whole the band is Black.
But Bruno. But that was my point. I was like, but so has Bruno. Bruno been doing this shit and doing it with us for a long fucking time. Bruno's quote unquote crime seems to be that he lived on the pop and rhythmic charts before 24 Karat Magic or before Uptown Funk. But Uptown Funk was also produced by a white boy. So it's like, come on, guys. You ain't got no problems with Amy.
That's my problem is that the millennials, like you said, the young millennials, the arguments just don't make any sense.
They have no context around them.
It's just like with you know, I hate to sound like the old guy, but just like with so much with the young millennials, the argument only makes sense for them in that particular moment. That particular moment, it'll make sense now, but 5 minutes later, you can shoot a hole in what they said because
they'll move the goalposts.
Yeah, you said because it moved the goalposts and there is no substance. It's just kind of like, I'm just making this argument to fit. I'm making that point just to fit my argument. It's only that. And after that, then it's on to the next thing. Like, you know, I hate Bruno, but I love French. I hate Bruno, but I love Khaled. I hate Bruno, but I love Amy Winehouse. I hate Bruno, but I love Adele. It's like, what are we doing here?
And if your issue is that you think his music is corny, that you think it's karaoke, that's very different from appropriation.
That's just your opinion.
They're not, and that's the thing, like people are conflating those two things. They can't know. They were like, well, he started out with a pompadour and now all of a sudden, you know, he's rocking the 90s code. But even then he was crediting funk and doo-wop. Guess who else had pompadours? Every Black motherfucker in the 60s.
The other thing the girl said that irked, she said a lot of shit to irk me. Another thing that she said that really irked me, she's like you said, she's like, Bruno's just karaoke and he's just taking and stealing our stuff. Whereas Michael and Prince, they were creating stuff. They weren't stealing stuff. I'm like, guys, you don't know your history.
At all. Michael stayed stealing stuff.
Well, Michael said, I stole my shit from James Brown. He said it. He didn't front. He was like, yo, I stole my shit from James and Jackie Wilson and, you know, Lil Richard with the look and all that. And Prince said, yo, I had a multicultural band because I stole it from Sly Stone.
Right.
Said that.
And Michael's biggest hits were written by a white boy named Rod Temperton.
Yeah.
So that's my other thing, right? Because I was even like, y'all got issues with Chad Hugo? Y'all got issues with, like, it seems to be that while Bruno was writing and making hits for Black people, or while Chad is producing for Black people, or while Rod Temperton was writing massive hits for Black people, that's cool. Your issue is when this person becomes the face of the music, which is just as whack as you, like, it's the other side of the appropriation argument. Like, if you're okay with a person behind the scenes but not as the face, that makes you actually no better than somebody who is appropriating, because that means that you think that Black music, it's Black music, but the sound doesn't only have to come from a Black person. Like, we call it Black music because we're the ones who tend to have that soul and that feeling and that spirit and that rhythm and that energy. But we've seen people of other races able to be part of this sonically.
To feel it and emulate it. Yep.
Yeah.
And my thing also is like, yo, like, again, you know, full disclosure, obviously, like, Bruno's on Atlantic, so I'm a little biased, but it's like, yo, like, if you have them, then somebody just do it better.
Yeah.
He's doing it the best right now. Like, if then, yeah. It ain't like he's there and there's a black artist that isn't getting their shine because Bruno's in the slot.
Right.
It's like, no, he's getting that shine because
and nobody else is in the slot.
Killing it. He's killing it.
And that used to be the argument with Justin, is that there would be other artists who were doing music like Justin was doing, but Justin was getting the look, and that was valid. But nobody's doing what Bruno's doing right now. And the people that he allegedly stole the shit from are all giving him props.
Yeah.
Mike Bivens giving him props. Fucking Jimmy Jam giving him props. Like
Teddy
these
Riley.
Teddy Riley, Quincy. These people are giving him props. So if the people who are the originators of this sound and feeling are okay with this and co-signing this and approving this, what the fuck are you talking? Like, you're not the arbiter. That's the thing, millennials. I love y'all to death. Y'all ain't the first black people. Like, please don't think we've been walking around here for decades completely unaware of our blackness. And you're not the arbiters of black culture. And you're not the protectors and the gatekeepers of black culture. Like, it's not that monolithic. And y'all just like to be mad at shit. And somebody else phrased it this way, and it's true. And y'all learned a bunch of fucking buzzwords on the internet that y'all just like to throw the fuck around.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody else phrased it this way, and it's really true. Y'all, this whole argument about Bruno is really way too centered on white people instead of just what we like and what we enjoy. It's about, well, this is what white people like to do, and this is what white people are going to buy, and this is what white people are going to listen to, and they don't do, but do you like the song? Like, did you, like, were you dancing to 24 Karat Magic? It's a jam,
yes,
right?
Yes, she was, because there ain't nobody not dancing to that.
Yeah, have you seen, like, 24 Karat Magic comes on, it's like a drug. Like, literally, I've never known a song
that's what I'm saying. Everybody
to inspire
goes
that
in.
Kind of reaction. Like, you can't help it. You literally can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, the song is, what, a year and some change old? But anyway,
yeah,
young people being stupid. And when I dropped the sermon, the number of young millennials who still didn't know that fucking Lisa Stansfield was white, who didn't know that Hall & Oates were white, who still don't know that Bobby Caldwell is white, like, don't know Simply Red is white, this is why y'all need to not have these conversations.
Yeah, just
because you don't know. You literally do not know.
What you think, bro?
I did not want to call that young lady stupid. I only listened to about 37 seconds of that clip.
And you checked out.
And I checked out because she was clearly, I mean, she was so blatantly wrong, right? Like, she was so blatantly wrong. And my issue with her and a lot of the what I'm starting to see now is there's like this performative outrage that
is
really based in what I like to call the industry of being a contrarian.
Mm.
And so they have found a way to raise these voices and bang these things and basically dog whistle. They basically found these words that they've now, you know, adapted into their language, and now it's a dog whistle. And they've used this to be content providers, to be panelists, for speaking engagements, to leverage into jobs and certain things like that. And this is a part of it. Now, for this young lady to say that Michael Jackson didn't really pop until he was lighter was like, it was the most like he literally was a star at like five.
That's what I'm saying.
like, what are you talking about right now? Like you and the fact that no one checked her. The fact that no one checked her also tells me that they operate as this sort of think tank with no real perspective or no real sort of older person to maybe help guide the conversation, to maybe help show you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to that point, they seem to think that discussion means consensus, right? Because one of the things this young lady came in my mentions very upset about was, I just hate how all y'all who disagree, you know, are acting like the conversation is not valid. You know, they have a right to have the conversation. Why shouldn't they have the conversation? I was like, I never said they shouldn't have the conversation. But what happens is you put out a point, people are going to put out a counterpoint. So they have a right to have their conversation. We have a right to say that their points are absolutely not valid. And here's why, right? So it becomes this thing where, like, if you like being contrary equals being woke. And if you're like, you're tripping and you're making too much of it, you are basically cheering for the detriment and downfall of all blackness. Basically, that's how they act. Like, you ain't real. You ain't about it. Let's just give a black card to Eric. Like, when I said that it was impossible, because they've been coming for Cardi too. When I said that it was impossible to say that a Bronx bred Latina is appropriating hip hop culture, one girl responded and said, well, fuck, she from the Bronx. Let's just give everybody from the Bronx a black card. You get a black card. You get a black card. I was like, no, bitch, I ain't say black card. I said it's impossible to say that a Bronx bred Latina is appropriating a culture that was born and created in her space by her people. Like, what are you talking about?
Those are also people who think that hip hop started around 1997.
Yeah.
Right. Also true. This is what I'm saying. There is no historical context in which these points are being made on. It is utterly ridiculous. And I feel like we just sort of, and another thing that happens and another thing that occurs is that these are actually book smart folks that are making these arguments. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is that they're incredibly articulate and they're very good at speaking because they talk shit all day long. Right. Mm-hmm. Like this is what they do. And so they have these clear, concise points that are well articulated and it sounds amazing, except it is fraud and it is bullshit and it is wrong.
Straight bullshit, right? Son.
Like
right, but it sounds great.
It's greatly worded bullshit, right? And you know, again, even the 33 seconds, this was not about a conversation. This was about everyone sort of agreeing and yassing
facts,
sister, and all of that shit, man. Like you said, like that young lady sounded like a fucking fool.
Yes,
it was the dumbest shit I've ever heard to even utter those words when fucking Michael Jackson was a pop star.
Yeah.
He was a fucking pop star. He had a cartoon. He had a fucking, like, what are you talking about right now?
Yeah. Dumb shit.
And so what I'm seeing, man, is that this is about just sort of how can I get a pot and a spoon and how can I bang? I just want to bang and be loud. I just want to, like, fuck the facts. I don't need to be right. I just need to get people to. And so social media sort of allows that because they have a lot of followers. Mm-hmm. They have a big following. And most of those kids don't really have a grasp of the context. But there's never really a discussion. Like, the fact that this is even a thing, and this is what I mean by like, the contrarian industry, right? Because guess what happened the day after that? Several sites picked that up.
Yep.
And made that content.
Yeah, no doubt.
A lot of sites picked that up and made that content, right? Because it moves the needle and it's bullshit.
Yeah, quote unquote reputable sites. A complex actually interviewed the girl.
Like,
I'm like, what? Like y'all interviewed her? Like,
this
really?
Is and you know, look, man, I don't know if this is a hustle.
Well, because
for this
white people aren't sure if this is a valid argument or not. So they're like, ooh, let's get in on this.
And so because we have everyone, you know, we are making points and making inroads and having the discussions about actual appropriation and about actual things that are occurring, like it's like we throw these blanket statements and it sounds foolish. It's not really worth the argument. And this woman, this young woman, clearly has no grasp of black music.
Yeah,
like at all. Like
past 2005.
Not like we're not even going to deal with early jazz and early recorded music, right? Like, we won't even talk about how they were fucking, like, we won't even get into that.
Yeah.
We're just going to talk about modern music. If you just wanted to go from the 60s, you know, from the Motownish era to now, like, you're still wrong.
Dead wrong. So, again, like I said, when the cookout happened this summer, or the block party, or the wedding, or the wherever they play that 24 karat, who's going to be, ain't nobody going to be, none of y'all going to be sitting down. So all y'all talking shit anyway. So whatever. Did y'all read that story I sent, the link I sent about the kid from New Zealand?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, this is kind of wild. So in 2010, this kid was, his name is Sam Bally. He's 19 years old. He's hanging out with a bunch of friends, drinking wine, and somebody pulled out a slug and dared him to eat the slug.
Why? Like, why would you even?
Because you know why. So the colonizers ate the slug. He ate the slug. And the slug proceeded to have some type of parasite, like a rat, something parasite apparently that the slugs get, because slugs will eat like rat shit, and then of course it goes into their system.
Yes.
And so he ingested that, and it in turn gave him a brain virus, infection of the brain, caused him to go into a coma for 420 days and become a paraplegic. Now, this kid was like a rugby player. He was active. You know, he was 19 years old, regular kid, you know. He eats a slug on a dare, and so he goes into a 424-day coma, becomes a paraplegic. And now the story has risen back above ground because his health care is crazy, of course, the prices. Right. And they just passed a law saying that they're cutting back his yearly. He had a yearly package health care for $492,000 in 2016. And last September, they reviewed his plan and slashed his allocation to $135,000. So his family, his mom and all them are in panic now because obviously they can't afford his care. And they're basically like, yo, he's going to die without this care. Like they'll one nursing service alone, $42,000. Like they're like, they're so far in debt. They can't even think to see above the ground.
So what I'm going to say is going to sound so fucked up. It's going to sound really fucked up,
but
this ain't nothing but natural selection. Cause why would you eat a slug? They crawl on the ground. That's what they do.
Apparently this is one of those things where it's like it's a 90, you know, a 99.7% chance you'll survive this, right? With no problems. And he was like one of the 0.3s. It was saying that it was just so rare for all of those things to yeah, listen, I mean, it's dumb.
This is some self-inflicted shit.
It's dumb as fuck, right? And it's you know what it is? It's very 19-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
It's very 19-year-old. How many motherfuckers over in Mexico on spring break right now getting ready
eating to drink a worm? Mm-hmm.
Eating a worm out of the bottom of some goddamn tequila in a horrible place.
At least that's been soaking in alcohol. You know, I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm just saying.
At least it's clean. Yes.
At least the shit been sterilized. But yeah, I'm not doing that either. I'm not putting. You're right. It's a very 19-year-old thing to do. But and I get it. When you're that young, you really don't understand
Superman.
You're healthy. You got Superman complex.
Yeah.
But still. If I was his healthcare provider and I knew the story, I might have slashed his benefits long.
Oh yeah, they know.
Which again sounds really fucked up, but I understand
the story. And I mean, this is, you know, look, the game is the game. I mean,
he might don't make it to the end of the year because they ain't got the money. They ain't got the money to do his care. I mean,
unfortunately,
from $500,000 to $135,000, that's $350,000 of care that's gone. So, you know, God bless him, man. But, jeez, man. Last thing, I just want to mention, I don't know, we got to get into it, but have y'all been watching Unsung this season?
I have.
I watched a couple. I haven't
It's only been three. I think it's three. It's been four. 4 years.
It's been four. And, like, one of them was Trick Daddy.
The Trick Daddy one was really good.
I got to watch the Trick Daddy one. I tried to watch Blue Magic.
Blue Magic was disappointing. And it wasn't as good as
Yeah.
It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. I mean, it was very typical. We got together. We made money. We had the girls. We broke up. And now we back. You know, it wasn't a story we ain't heard 100 times before. But
yeah, we was Daddy exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But the Trick Daddy one was good. And the Boys one was surprisingly good.
Yeah, I mean, that's because it was kids, right? And you sort of connected them. And you actually learned a couple things because I didn't know that they were doing the writing and production. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they really did pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
So that was really surprising. I mean, I watched the Trick Daddy one. It was, if you were around during that, it was very well produced, but this wasn't something that you didn't really know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Blue Magic one was also very disappointing, man. It definitely was like, y'all did coke and then that was it.
Yeah, y'all did coke. Y'all had a fight.
Story of everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was basically the five heartbeats.
It was literally the five heartbeats. Literally.
Yeah, I had a car accident. Now it's 10 Blue Magic performances.
They told me I wasn't going to walk again.
Yeah, but here I am. You know,
God willing.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, but I mean, you know, I've enjoyed that. And I've actually really enjoyed the Uncensored show, too. I haven't seen the latest one, but Neil Long.
I keep forgetting to put it on.
I checked out on it. I watched Tiffany Haddish, and I think I watched maybe like 20 minutes of the Tamar, and I was like, I can't do this. God bless
him. I saw a couple clips of the Neil Long one, and that one looks interesting, so I'm going to check that out. So I just want to get him a little love. I think that's it, man.
Yep.
Kind of covered everything.
Shout out to The Chi. Once again, season finale is on Sunday.
Man, last night's Chi episode was crazy.
I'm really enjoying this shit.
Last night's episode was nuts. Sunday night rather, excuse me. That was like, whoa.
I'm really, really enjoying it. And this, so the season finale is next week. Somebody said it was The Wire, if The Wire had black writers. I don't think it's as complex as The Wire.
No, it's not.
And the writing's not as strong as The Wire, but I can see the relation. But I really enjoy it. I really enjoy the show a lot.
And Papa's everybody's favorite character.
That little fat boy?
Yeah.
He is funny. Yeah. Ooh, he's funny.
Yeah. So, I'm glad
he's a delight.
Yeah. Peace to the Chi. It's been awesome. So that's it. We're going to wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
Later, y'all.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.